This KABU program, the Health Watch that is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from The Way of Health, a nonprofit health clinic emphasizing internal medicine, including special programs for mental health issues such as depression or anxiety. Also Chinese medicine and acupuncture. The Way of Health is located at the corner of Southeast Market and 106th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-788-4165. Also by Foodfront Cooperative Grocery, specializing in foods from local and organic producers. Foodfront is located in Northwest Portland at 24th and Northwest Thurman. And for more information, the number there is 503-222-5658. The purpose of this program is not to prescribe a treatment to individuals. Listeners should consult their healthcare practitioner before attempting any treatment.
Good morning and welcome to Health Watch. I'm Dr. David Naiman, your host, and we're happy to have back on Health Watch Dr. Randall Neustetter. Dr. Neustetter has practiced holistic medicine for more than 30 years in the San Francisco Bay Area, specializing in child health care. He's a licensed acupuncturist and a doctor of oriental medicine, as well as the education director of the Holistic Pediatric Association. Dr. Randall Neustetter is the author of Child Health Care and also the book that we're discussing today, The Vaccine Guide, Risks and Benefits for Adults and Children. And we'd encourage you, the listener, to call in if you have any questions about vaccines or alternatives to vaccines or controversies around them at the studio here, 503-231-8187. Welcome back to Health Watch.
Thanks, David. Good to be here.
Well, I think this is one of the more hot-button issues for parents. I mean, other than how to feed your child, this seems to rank pretty high. How do you start with new patients or new parents and figuring out where to begin with the vaccine issue?
Well, I think it's a very scary issue for parents. And like most health issues that people are confronted with when they have little information, the first reaction is out of fear and anxiety. If someone's given a diagnosis, their first reaction is fear. If somebody's presented with a potential problem like a serious life-threatening disease that vaccines are supposed to prevent, then their reaction is, oh gosh, we need to do something to prevent this, especially if the pediatrician is assuring them that vaccines will do that, they'll be effective, and that they'll be safe. But parents are discovering that lo and behold, the vaccine manufacturers and drug companies that they have come to distrust in other realms are also pushing vaccines very hard and have a lot of money to make off of vaccines. So it's a more complex issue than just getting reassurance from your pediatrician and going ahead, because vaccines do have a lot of side effects. So the first thing I do with parents is have them take a deep breath and assure them that they can make an informed decision. All they need is information. Like any other consumer choice issue, they can decide what they want, they can be in the driver's seat, and decide if it is in their best interest and child's best interest to do individual vaccines. And really the choice is about whether you want this individual vaccine or not, whether the risks of the vaccine are greater than the potential risks of your child getting the disease. And that is a pretty simple choice, but it involves a lot of information. But parents are smart, and they're really good consumers, and they know how to do the research and make their own decisions, and I encourage parents to do that. So I wrote my book, The Vaccine Guide, to assist parents in making those choices.
You mentioned the profit motive for pharmaceutical companies that seem to be going unchecked. And also there seems to be a bias in the medical community that vaccines are an inherent good regardless of what the vaccine is for. So we're seeing more and more recommended for children. I was wondering if there were examples from other countries with maybe a different relationship to the corporate world where we're seeing different recommendations for vaccinations.
When you have a socialized system of medicine and the government is paying for the vaccines, it's always totally different issue, and parents may be given the same information, but the pressure and coercion to do more and more vaccines is much less in countries like Scandinavia, Europe, Japan. Those countries actually give parents a choice, and they often delay vaccines till children are older and use less vaccines and use them more cautiously because of the many studies that show adverse reactions in children, especially at very young ages. And I really encourage parents to wait until children are 12 months old before they do any vaccines, just because it's been shown repeatedly that young infants are much more susceptible to vaccine damage than older kids are.
I know that a lot of naturopathic physicians recommend, even if you're getting all of the vaccines recommended by your physician, that you spread them out and don't get them all at the same time as well. And is that part of your strategy, to try to give the immune system a better chance to recover after a vaccination? So perhaps instead of getting mumps and measles and rubella together, you'd get them spread out over a period of time?
I think that the less assault on the immune system from vaccines at one visit, the better. And certainly if a child is sick or stressed in any way, then there's going to be more risk associated with the vaccines. You want a child to be as strong as possible and have as little dose as possible. So this goal of combining more and more vaccines and creating super vaccines that babies can get at birth, I think, is really wrong-headed from the point of view of the child's welfare. It makes a lot of sense economically, because the less doctor visits you have, the less that your health care is going to cost, and less insurance companies are going to have to pay out. And so there's a lot of motive to include more and more vaccines, and plus they sell more and they become more expensive.
We're talking today with Dr. Randall Neustetter, the author of The Vaccine Guide, Risk and Benefits for Adults and Children. If you'd like to join the conversation here on Health Watch, the number is 503-231-8187. So how much, I'm sure this is different from vaccine to vaccine, but how much are the adverse reactions actually due to the substance that's, or how much of it is used to things like mercury that are being added in as potentiators?
Well, the short answer is no one knows, because vaccine studies are done by vaccine companies, and that's who does the financing. So they're very reticent and disinterested in studies that show something bad about vaccines. So they are unlikely to do studies that isolate whether it's the formaldehyde or the antifreeze or the toxin in from the virus or bacteria itself that is causing adverse reactions. We know some of that because there are studies that look at a vaccine that has one additive and compared to vaccines that don't have the additive. So there are some of those studies, but really it's pretty sparse. And so my concern is, as you say, there are a lot of substances in vaccines. They have to add stuff to them to make them more effective and to preserve them. I think the issue around mercury at this point is a kind of moot point, because mercury is being taken out of most vaccines, and there are only a few given to children that have them, or adults for that matter, and the FDA wants to take mercury out of all drugs. But the vaccine companies and the government are using the mercury issue now to assure people that vaccines are safe because we've taken the mercury out, but people need to be aware that there are other toxic substances in vaccines that are known to cause cancer and immune system damage, and you're delivering it straight into children's bloodstreams that who knows what
could happen. One thing I came across in doing a little preparation for today's show is around how underreported vaccinations are, and I found a statistic that that 90% of doctors don't report adverse reactions to vaccinations. Why would that be the case?
Well, the reporting system for vaccine reactions is totally voluntary, first of all. So it's trouble to do it, just paperwork. But doctors are generally very well-intentioned, and they don't want to think that something that they're doing, that they've been taught is a boon to preventive medicine, is causing problems in kids. And pediatricians love children. So they don't want to unconsciously, subconsciously think that something that they're doing is harmful to the child. And they've also been told that just because something happens soon after some event doesn't mean that there's a cause and effect relationship. And so a problem like autism, for example, that people are really pointing the finger at vaccines about, doctors are saying, well, autism starts at the same time that you're giving vaccines, whether you give the vaccine or not. And so a causal relationship is really not clear. So I'm not going to report it because I'm not sure that that's the case. So denial and just basic reluctance, I think, are behind the underreporting.
Well, one thing that I really appreciate about the vaccine guide that you wrote is I think this decision-making process for each vaccine can be quite complicated because it involves a lot of different elements. So, for instance, how effective is the vaccine? How dangerous is the disease that you're vaccinating against? And how dangerous is the vaccine itself? So I was wondering if we could pick perhaps what you consider the least or one of the least necessary vaccines for children, and then maybe we could also talk about then afterwards one of the safest and more effective and useful vaccines for children.
Okay, I'll run down a little list. Chickenpox, first of all, is a benign disease. The goal of chickenpox vaccination is to keep parents at work. So it's not to benefit the health of children because complications for chickenpox are extremely rare. So that's a vaccine that parents can cross off the list. Hepatitis B is a sexually transmitted disease. Children are not going to get it, so they can decide whether they're going to get it as adults. And so parents don't need to give that. Other diseases don't really exist anymore, like polio and diphtheria. These diseases are gone, and your child is not going to be exposed to them. The problematic vaccines are Haemophilus influenza for prevention of meningitis, because meningitis is common, and so that's a worrisome one that parents deal with, especially if their children are exposed to lots of other kids in daycare or if they're not breastfeeding, because breastfeeding has been shown to be really preventive for meningitis, and I really encourage parents to consider that when they're making that decision. Then there are also other immune-enhancing programs that parents can do for their kids that everyone, your listener to your show, is well aware of nutritionally. So I think those are that's a kind of summary of the least and the most worrisome of the diseases.
And what about, for instance, really common vaccines like tetanus, for instance? What are your feelings on a tetanus vaccination?
Well, my feelings are different than my opinion. So I'll talk about my opinion about it and what I tell parents. Tetanus is a very difficult disease to acquire, even at a time when there were no vaccines, and there was a big dependence on horses for transportation prior to the beginning of the 20th century, when we started to keep records. There were only 500 cases of tetanus a year in the United States. Now there are less than 50, and the majority of those are in IV drug users. So tetanus is very hard to acquire. It doesn't get into the nervous system very readily. So it's not a common disease. And if people have a strong immune system, then they're much less likely to get it. And tetanus in children is extremely rare. Most tetanus cases occur in people who are elderly, we assume, who have a weakened immune system for whatever reason. So I don't have so much anxiety about tetanus. And the other issue that lowers my anxiety is that there is an immune globulin shot that people can get after an injury that may be tetanus prone in the emergency room, a deep puncture wound or a wound that involves a lot of injury. So people do have choices, and I just am not so anxious about tetanus as could be about other things.
We're talking today with Dr. Randall Neustetter, the author of The Vaccine Guide. If you'd like to join the conversation on Health Watch, the number here is 503-231-8187. And I know a lot of money isn't going towards studying the downsides of vaccines, but there are people in the alternative medicine community that suggest that vaccination in general may play a role in immune system dysregulation. I was curious, are there any studies that show that?
There was a really great study that came out of the University of Illinois that was conducted by some researchers associated with the National Vaccine Information Center. And the NVIC does a lot of education around vaccine problems. But this study showed that there was significantly greater incidence of asthma and allergies in children who were vaccinated compared to children who were not vaccinated. And the way that they got that population was because the NVIC has a lot of members who are opposed to vaccines or have stopped vaccines after one child had a bad reaction and their other children didn't get them. So they had a fairly large database of people who were not doing vaccines, and they were able to study how common asthma and allergies were in those kids. There was another study that showed a higher incidence of asthma in vaccinated versus unvaccinated children as well. And diabetes has been associated with vaccines, the increase in diabetes in children. And both of those problems involve immune system, autoimmune dysregulation issues. So my concern is that we may be trading the control of infectious diseases through vaccines for a huge problem with chronic disease, chronic autoimmune disease that is definitely on the rise, nervous system disorders like autism and learning disabilities and ADD that have all been associated with vaccines, and those problems are lifelong. So we may not be doing the kind of preventive miracle that we have assumed for a few decades with vaccinations.
Well, let's take some calls. Welcome to Health Watch. You're on the air.
Yes, Dr. Neustetter mentioned that in this country there may not be much research on vaccines and on the side effects due to the self-interest of the pharmaceutical companies. And I just wondered, what is the situation in the more socialized medicine countries? In other words, are they doing much research in that area? And if so, or if not, why not? And just in general, what is the approach, or what are the approaches in those countries in terms of research? In our country, it seems like there's kind of a frenzy, research frenzy, that goes on, and of course, some of it's directed in terms of what is the self-interest of the pharmaceutical countries, but what goes on in those other countries?
That's
a really good question. I think that the issue revolves still around drug companies. Drug companies are the only source of funding for drug studies, and that's just not in the United States. The biggest drug companies in the world are in Germany, and these companies, like in many other industries, are merging and interrelated. financially. So I don't think in the developed world, which is the only place that would study drugs, there's any difference really between one country and another. Countries with socialized medicine don't have money to study these issues either, and they're struggling financially. So I don't think there's any difference, and the drug companies are kind of running the show.
Let's take another caller. Welcome to Health Watch. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
My concern here is that you can't get your kid into school without having all these immunizations. They just won't let you in. What are we supposed to do about that? Because I had some serious problems with one of my kids in pertussis. She almost died. So are you addressing, how do we address the issue at the school level?
Okay, there are two issues here, two questions. One is about exemptions to vaccines, and every state has a method for exemption from vaccines, and that includes a philosophical exemption in 20 states and a religious exemption in all states except one or two. And so it is possible to get your child into school for any kind of school without getting them vaccinated. You just need to write a letter to the school district stating your beliefs, and religious beliefs at this point are defined as personal beliefs. You don't have to belong to a religious organization opposed to vaccination. The second question is about whooping cough, and that's a really good issue too. Whooping cough, it can be a serious illness, but there is confidence in the alternative medicine community with using Chinese medicine, using homeopathic medicine to treat whooping cough. And I see whooping cough all the time and treat it with confidence, and those kids are not hospitalized. I've seen two-month-old babies with whooping cough, and they get through it. It's not fun, but we are able to treat it. And conventional medicine really has no treatment for whooping cough, and so they have much more fear of it and much more desire to try and prevent it, even if the vaccine causes problems.
Hi, thank you very much.
Thank you for the call. And your book, The Vaccine Guide, Dr. Neustadter, has a chapter on legal issues regarding vaccine refusal.
Right.
Yeah. Well, is that... that sounds like there's a lot of variation from state to state on what strategies a parent might potentially use to limit if they wanted to have freedom of choice around what vaccines are not to get. Is that true?
What vaccines not to get?
Well, like that it's going to be a very different situation in one state to another.
No, I don't think that it's a very different situation. I think that we have a pretty homogeneous population in terms of disease incidence. I think that inner city children may be more at risk, but they're more at risk of the vaccine reactions too.
I'm sorry, what I actually meant was in terms of the legal situation from state to state.
Oh, the legal issue. Well, yeah, if you have a philosophical exemption in your state, then you're kind of home free. All you need to do is sign that you don't want the vaccines. If you want if you have to get a religious exemption, then you have to word it according to the state law. And there are very good websites that people can go on that list the requirements of each individual state. And there are attorneys that can assist people if they're running up against problems in the school district. Usually the school district requires some education from parents or doctors in order to understand what the law is, because school districts are told the kids have to have vaccines and they're not getting into school. And they may not be educated about the possible exemptions either.
Well, let's try to squeeze in one more call before the end of the show. Welcome to Health Watch. If you could keep your question brief, that'd be great.
Yes, disease, chronic immune dysfunction syndrome, could there possibly be some connection with vaccines with this disease? I guess I better leave it there. You want me to be Sure. Bye.
Yes. The short answer is yes. My concern is that we are really doing a disservice to the population's immune system, and that is creating havoc in the immune regulatory mechanisms. Autoimmune disease is on the rise. We have diseases now that never existed before. Autism is a disease of the last 40 years and increasing at exponential rates, as is childhood and adult onset diabetes. And I think that these problems are directly related to the adverse effects of our vaccination program.
So unfortunately, we're probably not going to have a lot of time to go into information about alternatives to vaccines or ways to boost your immune system to avoid some of these diseases that people may or may not get vaccinated against. But are there one or two things you might want to mention other than breastfeeding, just to pique the interest of our listeners?
I think that an important issue is to eat natural foods. Just like most other immune system issues, getting a lot of antioxidants from fresh fruits and vegetables is really important, and avoiding sugar and highly processed foods, packaged stuff. There are supplements that people can take to boost immune function. I'm a big fan of children taking colostrum because of the immune boosting mechanisms and because it's perfectly safe. Giving kids cod liver oil, fish oil, omega-3 fats has been shown to prevent inflammatory reactions and boost immune system issues, vitamin C and zinc, mushroom formulas, reishi and shiitake mushrooms. Those are all supplements, I think, that are good for keeping kids' immune systems strong.
And do you have any websites you might recommend to people who wanted to look up more information about vaccinations?
Yeah, there are links on my website, which is cure-guide.com. The NVIC has an excellent website with a huge amount of information, and their website is 909shot.com. The largest website with vaccine information that will keep people busy for the next year is Whale, like the ocean-going mammal, .to. Whale.to has a huge website of information with all of the links to other websites, and people just get into the vaccine section and you'll get everything you ever wanted to know about vaccines.
Well, as always, it's great having you on Health Watch, Dr. Neustetter.
Okay, it's great to be here, and I want people to know that I have a free email newsletter that they can get on my website also, which is cure-guide.com.
Great. Thanks for being on Health Watch.
Okay, thank you.
We were talking today with Dr. Randall Neustetter, the author of The Vaccine Guide, Risks and Benefits for Adults and Children. Next week, I'll be back with some naturopathic physicians talking about cardiovascular health. Stay tuned for the rest of the Monday Morning Radio Zine.